Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, May 20th, 2017. So much has happened this past week. I realize we're doing you a terrible disservice only doing a show once a week, unfortunately, between our crazy, between our regular full-time jobs that we already have and everything else that we try to cram into a regular week. There just isn't time right now.
Yes.
I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And where to start? So this time last week, we were talking about the Comey firing.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it hadn't even been a week.
Right.
Since the Comey firing last Saturday. And now this Saturday, where do we even start? We've had it revealed that soon after Trump met with his Russian buddies, the Sergey brothers, the Sergeys, and was bragging to them about how he fired Comey and Comey was a nut job and now the pressure's off and he won't be investigated anymore. He was never investigated in the first place. That was leaked by someone within the White House staff and they didn't even deny that.
That was like the last thing that happened this week.
That was like the last thing.
That was like yesterday.
Go ahead and remind me of everything else.
Oh God, don't make me responsible. let's see. I think the first.
Well, week we hadn't even, the Comey memo thing hadn't even come out, had it?
The Comey memo.
Yeah.
Which one? What are you talking about?
Well, Comey's memo that detailed how he tried to pressure Comey into dropping the Flynn investigation.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
No. I think that was early this week.
Yeah. And then, God, so many things. Of course, he's in Saudi Arabia right now, and as wheels up and his plane went into the air, the Washington Post and New York Times dropped double bombshells on him and us. Mm-hmm. The New York Times one was remind me.
Well, I think both Washington Post and New York Times divulged that a person of interest had emerged in the
current White House. That was the Washington Post.
In the FBI investigation.
Right.
And that most people are speculating it's Jared Kushner.
Right. That is speculation.
Sure.
We don't know. But that the FBI is looking into a person close to the president, a senior advisor, currently working in the White House as a person of interest. So this would not be Paul Manafort and would not be Mike Flynn.
Right. No,
this is someone who currently works in the White House.
And is very close to the president.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is just coming tumbling down, is essentially what we're saying.
Yeah, it's all unraveling pretty quickly. And there's a little drip of Republicans finally saying enough is enough with this, but not enough yet for a full stampede, and that articles of impeachment are imminent. But please don't follow Louise Mensch on Twitter, please. She's full of crap. Just don't.
Okay, I don't know who she is.
No, I'm telling our listeners.
Okay. God, yeah. I don't know who she is.
She's this crazy British lady who is peddles in conspiracy theories, and she's been tweeting left and right that their impeachment is coming and there's sealed warrants for arrests and it's all a bunch of nonsense.
Okay. So she's like a leftist conspiracy theorist.
No, she's actually a right winger, I think. But now the left loves her because she's screaming about all the
so she's just a conspiracy theorist, generally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're coming for Trump any day, but
report on what the New York Times said because it's bothering me. So look it up. But anyway, so it just feels like a landslide. Like, it just kept coming and coming and coming, and every day was like, what the fuck? Like, it's crazy. And I think it's really interesting, again, going back to Trump, that the comments that he made during the meeting with the Russians about, oh, I fired that Comey guy, he's a nut job. Everyone seems to be focused on this idea that he called him a nut job. I don't think that's the story. I don't care. The fact that he said, I fired him because there was too much pressure on me with this Russia investigation, and now that pressure is relieved, I was never under an investigation. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, that's obstruction of justice. The White House does not dispute that he said that. And secondly, this man doesn't know how politics works. The idea that he thought, oh, if I just fire this guy, it'll go away, is so blindly stupid. the notion that firing the FBI director who's investigating you will make your problems go away, it just amplified them times 10. And I think the people inside the White House are done with this man. This was a transcript that was of the conversation between the Russians and Trump, and somebody decided, I'm just going to tell the press. Like, fuck this. I'm just going to tell the press because this is ridiculous and people need to know. So, what'd you find out?
Yeah, I think this must be what you're referring to. What we just talked about was the story of Trump talking to the transcript of him talking to the Sergeys.
Was that what it was? Yeah. Okay, that was the New York Times one. And then the Washington Post one was that there's a person of interest that works currently inside the White House as a senior advisor in the FBI investigation into Russia. So, gosh, it's a lot.
Yep.
It's a lot. The other night, we decided to watch All the President's Men.
Yes.
And, which, by the way, even if you have seen it, it's really worth rewatching right now. But if you haven't, it's an absolute must. And it really doesn't focus as much on Nixon as it focuses on the two journalists that ultimately took him down.
Yeah, the way that the investigation started was with these two dogged journalists who were still around.
Who were kind of green and like really not the top of the Washington Post.
No, they were rookies basically.
Yeah. And they wanted it and they
dug and dug.
And honest to God, if it not for these two men, I don't think we would ever have known.
Well, not in the way we know now and the way everything unraveled from that, which is just their nonstop relentless pursuing of every lead, everything that looked like it could be a lead, everything that smelled like it could be a lead.
And a true patriot, Mark Felt, who acted as Deep Throat and helped them. And, you know, we talk about leaks and we talk about these leakers and isn't it awful, but I think it's patriotic to say something really wrong is going on and the press needs to know about it.
I think there's no shortage of Mark Felts right now. I don't think they're bothering to meet in dimly lit garages. I think they're just picking up their phone and shooting emails.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of leaks right now. So these reporters' jobs are being made, I think, much easier.
Yeah.
And there was a lot in that movie and in the history that these guys necessarily weren't that smart, or they were smart, but when things got out of hand, they didn't know what to do. I don't think that the cover-up team this time around is that adept or smart.
Nope. No. And a lot of the, like, silencing of witnesses and stuff back then, people that worked for the committee to reelect the president.
Yeah, people were genuinely scared for their lives.
They were. And
because you had people. You had, like, former CIA assassin types that were sort of in on this. And you had the whole intelligence structure sort of in on the conspiracy. I mean, it was pretty deep. And I think Trump has tried to build that sort of infrastructure to insulate himself, but it's not as solid.
No. He doesn't understand the difference between maybe some shady business dealings when you're the CEO of a company and maybe some shady business dealings when you're the president.
Well, he does have Sessions at the head of DOJ, which from that perspective is smart.
But
it's covering
that's the
his own
other
ass.
Giant thing that happened this week was that the Deputy Attorney General appointed Robert Mueller to a special prosecution.
Yes.
which is extraordinary and what we've been asking for. And for any of you who don't know a lot about this guy, I did some research on him and he seems like a really legit, straightforward, straight-shooting investigator who will get to the bottom of this and quickly, and he'll get it done right. And that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the people out there who are, you know, oh, there's nothing to this, and I'm sure it's nothing, it should make you feel good, too. Because if there's nothing here, then he'll discover that there's nothing here, and we'll be done with it.
Yeah, but none of them actually believe that.
Well, I don't know. I think some of them do, and if that's the case, everyone should be welcoming.
I think most of them don't. Most of them will yell that and hope it goes away.
Look,
and complain that it's
this.
A witch hunt, just, which is the president's own tweets. Of course, the president unleashed a tweet storm. Well, here's what happened. This was interesting, right? The night that Mueller it was announced as special prosecutor, and I forget now, Tuesday, Wednesday, who knows?
Yeah, I don't.
Thursday, something.
I don't know.
Some day of the week. the initial statement out of the White House was measured, and he was like, okay, well, we look forward to the full investigation revealing whatever needs to be revealed and blah, blah, blah. And people were saying, oh, that's a very measured response from Trump.
Yeah.
And sure enough, by the morning, he was tweeting.
Yeah.
He was tweeting, it's a witch hunt, and no American politician has ever been scrutinized or treated more unfairly,
I can assure you, than yeah. I have.
And then there was an intervention, a Twitter intervention,
yes.
according to the Wall Street Journal, that's had taken place in the last couple days, them trying to explain to him that his tweets just don't help, they make everything worse.
And that his tweets are a part of presidential record, and like you yeah. can't lie, even if it's a tweet, because you're the president, and...
Or you can't claim things without evidence.
Right.
Like he said, Comey better hope there are no tapes, and now there's all sorts of subpoenas for tapes.
Yeah.
And this might be a Nixon type thing, where is he going to destroy the tapes or keep them? And if he does, that's a serious charge.
Yep.
And we haven't even gotten to that yet. And, of course, a lot of this was all kicked off sort of by him screaming about the Obama administration bugging.
Wiretapping him.
Wiretapping Trump Tower because he read it in Breitbart or something.
Yep. And
so they're trying to keep him from tweeting. It's not going to work. He's going to find a way to tweet.
Right. And I think what's so interesting is that the timing of the New York Times and Washington Post stories, as he's in the air, right, I think it's sort of trolling him, just like, all right. First trip.
I think the timing's coincidental.
I don't know.
I think it is.
I don't know.
I'm surprised he took the trip. I really thought with all the dams that were breaking this week that he was just going to postpone the trip and say, I need to attend to, you know, urgent matters here. But they said, no, we might as well try this distraction. And to a sense, it's already worked. We're watching MSNBC this morning, and the economics people are talking about how this could be a big win for the White House and the arms deal with Saudi Arabia. So for sort of a quick second, it's sort of taken the eye off the ball, but it's
but
not going to last.
Not really. I mean, not really.
Not really, no.
Like, they have to report that where he is, but...
Plus, sooner or later, he's going to say something ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, he's in Saudi Arabia right now, and they're giving him sort of like a king's welcome.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, it's really touchy over there. He does not have the disposition for touchy or sensitive.
Saudi Arabia, maybe not so much. His next stops, I worry about more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I just wonder what kind of meltdown he had in the air. Just, I mean.
Well, Priebus said he didn't sleep, which is an interesting thing for him to divulge.
That Priebus didn't sleep or Priebus, that Trump didn't sleep?
That Trump didn't sleep. Mm. Who cares if Priebus left?
I don't know. He was just like, guys, I'm really tired.
Guys, no, he said Trump didn't sleep. And Priebus made the news too this week. Priebus also, I think, told Comey or somebody to back off the Flynn investigation. No, he asked Comey to contradict reports of something to do with the Flynn investigation. That came to light too.
Right.
So Priebus... And then there were a lot of pieces on Pence, who is going to be the next president sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
That how could Pence possibly have been out of the loop with all the Flynn stuff when Sally Yates warned them back in December?
Yep.
And there were other warnings.
He was the head of the transition team.
Yeah.
So either he's incompetent or it's a lie.
Or they really are just making him look like an absolute fool and keeping him so out of the loop that he keeps going out there and making an ass of himself, in which case I'd be pretty pissed off if I was Pence. But
yep.
Who knows? The guy may just not have a spine whatsoever. And
I think that this is the plan, though. I think they tried to insulate him from any of this shit because they don't want him tarnished with the Russia stuff because it's eventually going to come out, and they want him to be the president. I don't know.
Before Trump took the oath of office, they said we need to insulate Pence from the reality of what a clusterfuck this is.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's some forward thinking if that's what happened.
I mean,
I kind of doubt that.
I don't know.
I think Pence is in this up to his eyeballs.
Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so.
I mean, I don't think he's the guy making the business deals in Russia, but I think he's aware of the entire apparatus, and he knew exactly all of Flynn's warts and dealings, and he just kind of went with it and hoped they'd get away with it. And
did we even talk about how Trump leaked classified information to the Russians? That was this week.
Right. I forgot about that. That was like Monday.
Yeah.
Or Sunday or something.
Yeah, Monday.
Right, I think it was right after we podcasted.
It was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday
morning. Because we were talking about McMaster. And he had, because it was Monday, because Tuesday morning we were talking about McMaster in the car and how, like, is he just falling on the sword or, yeah, like, what is his deal? So, okay, Monday. Oh, my God. Monday, there were reports that President, so the Washington Post reported, I should say, because they're my heroes, that President Trump leaked code word sensitive classified information to the Russians during his meeting with them.
The Israeli asset who was doing important spy work in terms of ISIS attempting to blow up planes.
Right.
And he divulged this to the Russians as sort of showing off.
Yeah.
And it horribly compromised an Israeli anti-terrorism asset. And the Israelis are livid. As should everyone be, but that's been lost in the last 10 stories.
That's, so it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Now, there was all these calls at the beginning, like, oh my God, he broke a law. It's not true. Technically, the president can declassify anything he wants at any time.
No, it was just a horribly shitty, damaging, terrible thing to do for the guy that got elected in no small part because he's going to be the one to effectively fight terrorism and he has a plan to beat ISIS. He just exposed a major intelligence asset and actually made the very much hurt the fight against ISIS.
Not to mention our relationship with Israel and our other allies who are like, okay, so if we give the U.S. classified information about what we're doing to fight ISIS, they're going to tell the Russians? How likely do you think it is they want to tell us shit now?
Right.
It's bad. Bad. So
The spin they were trying to put on that earlier was unbelievable. But then that got lost in the wash with
all the
other
stories. So McMaster is the guy that, like, I kind of feel like is the adult in the room. And I was sort of counting on him to keep the wheels on. And
which he may be doing.
He may be. So he came out and gave this statement that said...
He gave a weird non-denial.
He said... He didn't do anything untoward. I was in the room. He had every right. It was perfectly proper, blah, blah, blah.
Yes,
but the Washington
yes.
Post reported, like, look, we have all the information about what this is. The intelligence community reached out to us and said, this information is so sensitive that we would prefer that you not expose it. So the Washington Post is doing a better job at protecting our national security secrets than the president.
Yeah. Well, wasn't it also some of the president's own staff after this happened went to the CIA?
Yeah.
And the FBI?
Someone in the room.
And
yeah.
reported
and said, this
what
is what
happened?
Just happened. Holy shit. He just told the Russians this.
Yeah, this is bad.
Yeah. So anyway, McMaster... came out and said multiple times, had multiple statements, Trump using his reputation as a incredibly ethical, he has a great reputation and Trump's using it to cover for himself.
Right. Well, what McMaster actually did was a little weaselly. He came out and was very careful with parsing his words and he sort of denied things that were not claimed in the Washington Post article.
Okay.
That was part of it. And... You know, I was pretty pissed at McMaster. A lot of people are. But then there's been a lot of people rushing to his defense saying he has to do this. He knows what he's doing. He's the only adult in the room. He feels compelled and obligated to try to keep...
Mitigate this for the national security of the country. And if he has to take a hit, he'll take the hit. But he doesn't want the world to burn down.
Which I get, but I don't know what's in this guy's head. I don't know if he is just an opportunist and... wants to be in the limelight and is happy for his
position. I don't think so. I don't get that read off of him. But I was pissed and I was like, this is okay. But then I get the other side too. I mean, we're not just talking about taking down Trump. We're talking about preserving the Republic. And if that's what he's trying to do, then okay. As long as when it all comes tumbling down, you know, he's honest about what's going on. You know?
So there's a lot going on. We have concurrent Senate and House investigations into Trump Russia. Mm-hmm. We have the FBI investigation.
Oh, we have Comey is going to agree to testify after Memorial Day.
Nah, that's still unclear. I'm still getting lots of conflicting stuff about that, but it seems as though he might.
Well, that's what the news reported.
Yeah.
Last night.
Right.
Was that after Memorial Day, he will speak to the Senate Intelligence Committee, rather than the House, publicly about this whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's good. The investigation Mueller's investigation, they were saying last night that...
it's not taking place of the FBI investigation. It's sort of in addition to...
But he does have prosecutorial power. Like, he could make arrests.
Well, okay. Well, sort of. I think he can recommend arrest to the Department of Justice. And that's where it gets dicey.
Well, I don't want to get this wrong, so we'll have to look it up. But that's not my understanding.
Okay.
My understanding is that was one of the... sort of deals that they made was like, we're not going to have to go back to the DOJ. But
I don't know if that's how that works.
Okay. Anyway, what they were saying is that it's gotten to the point where they've collected all of this information and, you know, all this intelligence, and it's going to get to the point now where they're going to have to do interviews and talk to people. And it won't be publicly, but it's going to be public that meetings are happening. And so we're going to start to have more information in the following weeks and months.
Yep.
Yeah. So, it's all tumbling down.
Pretty much. Where exactly it goes, I'm not sure. It seems pretty clear to me, though, that congressional Republicans are going to hang on as long as they can so they can try to pass health care and tax cuts.
Right. This isn't about their loyalty to Trump. This is about they have a short period of time in which to ram through as much horrible shit as they can.
Which is really weird, too, because... God, it's a bad time to do that because, first of all, this stuff is really unpopular. The legislation is really unpopular. We haven't even talked about healthcare.
No.
Like this horribly unpopular AHCA that the Senate is trying to craft right now. And by the way, there's news on that, too. Did you read that the way Paul Ryan tried to jam it through via reconciliation now means that the House may have to re-vote on it?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, that's been lost in the shuffle, but that's huge news.
Wow.
So no one's quite sure how that might play out. I'm going to have to look that story up because that's a big story that was just like, it was Thursday or Friday, and oh, by the way.
Oh, by the way.
Paul Ryan may have totally screwed up the AHCA House bill in the way he tried to sort of jam it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're trying to pass the stuff that's grossly unpopular in a very, very weakened White House who's on the defensive. I mean, what is the political expediency in this? This seems like a disaster just waiting to happen. I guess it looks worse with a hobbled White House and they don't even get anything passed and they're completely feckless. And
I don't know. I mean,
there's no good options right now and they're trying to pick the least bad. But here's what's clear to me. The core of congressional leadership, they are not going to turn on Trump till the bitter, bitter, bitter end.
Yep.
Until Mueller or somebody stands up there and announces charges of treason or collusion or something. Like, and even then, some of them may hold out. I just, you know.
It's political suicide.
To do what?
To do that.
Well, it was political suicide to have Trump become the leader of your party, but...
Now I mean, it worked out really well for them. They own everything. They run everything.
Okay. And they've passed what exactly?
Nothing. Well, I guess, what, the one thing?
What one thing?
Well, I don't remember the first thing. We talked about it.
A couple minor things, nothing big.
Yeah.
They haven't passed healthcare yet.
No.
And that seems very much in doubt.
The House passed it, but that doesn't mean anything.
They haven't passed their tax cut, and Lord knows when that legislation will ever come to the floor.
Yeah.
You know?
And if it does, I don't know. I mean, I know that...
There's no infrastructure bill on the horizon.
No. Fuck no. No. I mean, no.
So what did they win?
Nothing. They won control. We aren't doing shit.
That's true.
We had a plan. We had a plan to do good things.
Yeah. Well, like we've talked about ad nauseum, the pivot from obstruction to governing is a high hurdle.
Yes.
And when you have totally incompetent and corrupt White House, it makes it even harder.
And when your ideas are wildly unpopular with the American people, again, why did you vote Republican?
But again,
you hate all of their ideas. I don't understand.
The talking heads aren't even talking about that right now. It's all Trump-Russia scandal all the time.
Because it's constantly
sure, which is fine, but the fact of the matter is, Americans care a lot more about this AHCA thing, I guarantee you.
Well, they will if it goes forward, yeah. Well, I mean, they care about it right now.
It's
they care
go
about
forward.
It. That's why it's not going forward. Because people are calling their congresspeople and angry at town halls and yelling about, you're killing my wife.
But, Rachel, it is going forward. The Senate is crafting a bill. It is going to get to the floor of the Senate at some point. I don't know when, maybe a little later than they thought, but in the not too distant future, and the House may have to revote. I'm going to go ahead and find that story while you go ahead and fill the space here on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll pass. That's what I'm saying. I think people are pissed and they don't want it, and they're telling their congresspeople, and it's working. And I don't know. I don't have any confidence that the Senate will say, yeah, let's take away people's health care. Mm-hmm. You do have confidence that the Senate's going to do that?
They're going to put something together that's either slightly less odious or just as odious.
And it's going to pass the Senate, you think?
It's got a chance. I'm not sure if it will, but it's got a chance.
I don't know. And then, of course, Trump will sign whatever. That's the whole point. That's the whole reason that they don't withdraw support from him, is because he'll sign whatever the fuck they put in front of him.
Okay, so this is an article that came out Thursday. One moment, please.
Okay. We're going to talk about how the House may have to vote on the GOP healthcare bill again because of the way that it was gone through, and we're having technical difficulties. So,
okay. The GOP healthcare bill may not be done in the House of Representatives after all. This is in the Business Insider. While the American Healthcare Act passed the lower chamber by a razor-thin margin on May 4th, a procedural quirk could force another vote on the bill before it is sent to the Senate, according to Bloomberg's Billy House. Bloomberg on Thursday reported that House Speaker Paul Ryan had not yet sent the AHCA to the Senate. That is apparently because the Congressional Budget Office has not scored the final version of the bill, which included two major amendments. Without the score, the House is unsure of how much the bill could affect the federal budget. Since the bill is being moved through the process of budget reconciliation, which allows Republicans to avoid a Democratic filibuster in the Senate, it must slice at least $2 billion off the federal budget for it to qualify. Before the amendments were added, the CBO projected that the legislation would slice about $150 billion over 10 years. So, again, this is all this procedural stuff that we had tried to talk about, but it gets dicey when you get into trying to pass something through reconciliation. There's rules.
Right.
And so
instead of just having a vote.
Yeah, and they may not have really followed the rules. And anyway.
Because they don't actually know how to govern.
The bill is just being held until CBO issues its final score, a representative for Ryan told Business Insider. If changes are needed for the bill, the House may have to pass an amendment that would likely become a referendum on the whole of the AHCA. Representative Greg Walden, the chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, who was an author of the original AHCA, told Bloomberg that the House GOP leadership was waiting on the CBO score. Other rank-and-file members who were asked by Bloomberg, however, suggested they had been kept in the dark. Of course, they could have looked up, like, congressional rules.
Hey, what are the rules for where I work?
Oh, a GOP aide – I'd read the bill. A GOP aide told Business Insider that the House GOP expected the bill to still make the deficit threshold. Based on the previous two scores, we believe we'll hit our target deficit reduction number, but we're holding out of an abundance of caution, the aide said.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. They may have to revote. Revote after the CBO comes out and says how many millions are going to get kicked off insurance.
Well, and that's the fun part. They were trying to just ram it through without the CBO score because the CBO score says how many people are going to lose health insurance and how much more it's going
to
cost.
Yeah, now they might be saddled with having to vote again.
They wanted to just say, before it even gets to CBO, just vote Senate. Just vote on it. Just vote. Don't let the CBO score it.
We could pass it through reconciliation.
And the Senate was like, no. Like, even Republican senators were like, I'm not voting on anything that the CBO hasn't scored. This is crazy.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that they're just scrapping it and sort of rewriting their own bill. And Freedom Caucus doesn't know how that's going to look. The idiot so-called moderate Republicans in blue districts who voted for it don't know how it's going to look. And they get to step up and vote for this crap burger again after the CBO comes out and says all their constituents are going to be kicked off insurance.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Yep.
I mean, like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
And it's not being really reported on again because of all the Trump-Russia crap.
Yeah. But, now, I didn't know that about the CBO, that they were actually going to have it scored before sending it to the Senate. That's really interesting because it's going to be a shit show of a score. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Well, the only number that they'll pump up and yell about is the initial cost savings from slashing all the, Medicaid and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that over time, that's going to cost however many more trillion.
Yeah.
Because people don't have coverage.
But the CBO score will say, like,
how many people are going to
lose their insurance. Yeah. And how much that's going to cost and all the things. Yeah. That's why they didn't want to have it.
Right. Exactly.
And here's now, this garbage bill that's going to ruin people's lives. Shh.
And unless I'm missing something, it's like now they're going to have to go back after all the Trump-Russia crap. And it's like the GOP has just had the worst news cycle of the last 2 weeks ever.
And now they're
going to have to go back and go through this AHCA thing again.
They'll just have to add an amendment. But it'll have to be because of the score, which people will talk about, the media will report on, and it'll be a bloodbath.
And then people like us and all the Democratic opponents said, oh, they're going to vote again to take away your insurance after the AHCA.
After they were told how many of you were going to die.
Yeah.
But they didn't know before, maybe, so they voted for it. But now that's black and white, mm-hmm. clear as day, here's the impact of this garbage bill. Yeah, please vote. Please, please let's vote on it again.
This seems like insanity to me.
I know, me too.
But I don't know, and I assume it'll pass the House again, although maybe it won't. No one's really talking about this.
They only needed three people, right? Three Republicans to not vote. And
if the bill is essentially exactly the same, it would be a little crazy for them. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be that crazy.
It wouldn't be to say, oh my God, we didn't realize the impact. Once the CBO score came out, I can't support this bill. That's an easy.
That's cover, yeah.
But then you say, why didn't you wait till the CBO scored it before voting on it?
Well, who cares? But you're trying to argue logic with the House of Representatives.
Right.
Anyway, this guy Rosenstein is a piece of work, right?
Yeah.
So he briefed Congress, I think it was yesterday. And what they want... Okay.
He's the Deputy Attorney General.
Okay, let's talk about more stuff we haven't gotten to yet, right? Because after Comey was fired, what was immediately cited was...
Yes.
Deputy AG Rosenstein wrote this memo about how James Comey was just, he couldn't do the job anymore and he should be fired.
Yeah.
That was the party line all that night.
Yeah.
Then first thing in the morning, Trump gets on Twitter and the interview with Lester Holt comes out
right.
and says, no, it was my idea. I was going to do it anyway.
Right. Yeah. We talked about this last week, but yeah, exactly. Like, and so, yeah. Yeah, and so then everyone was like, wait.
Well, then it gets better.
Right.
Because then they have Rosenstein testify about it, and Rosenstein says, oh, no, I knew he was going to fire him, like, from the day of inauguration.
Yeah, he's like, I knew he was going to fire him before I wrote the memo.
Yeah, and then they're like, well, then what was the point of the memo? So did he make you write the memo? Like, did you write it on your own volition? And he really just refuses to answer that.
Right.
So what is this guy doing?
I don't know, but...
Like, what do they have on him? How badly has Rosenstein been, what's the word?
Compromised.
Like,
yeah.
That is so weird.
And then he's the guy who appoints Mueller.
Well, he appoints Mueller because he's, I am not dealing with this shit anymore.
Yeah.
But
and it's what people want, and it makes me look like I'm not in the pocket.
And rightfully, this was just yesterday, rightfully, I think it was the Senate Intelligence Committee and then maybe some other committees... Maybe it's just Senate Intelligence Committee. We're grilling them. They're like, can we please get to the bottom of this whole memo thing?
Yeah.
Because the White House said they fired Comey based on your recommendation. Then they told us something otherwise. And then you're turning around and telling us that Trump was going to fire him from day one. Can you please give us a straight fucking answer?
Yeah.
And he didn't.
Right.
And he just refused to. And it's like, is he purposefully just trying to make everybody crazy?
I don't know.
What is this guy doing?
He's doing what he has to do because it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Trump fired Comey because he was pissed about the Russia investigation and the AG's office tried to cover it up. And then Trump couldn't hold his goddamn tongue for long enough. And so now he has to tell the truth because Trump told the truth. There's no great, it's a conspiracy. Like, there's a reason Trump did what he did.
It's a horribly orchestrated conspiracy.
Yeah, there's a reason Trump did what he did. Everyone knows what that reason is. We tried to make an excuse that Trump then didn't use.
Yeah,
so now I have to tell the truth. It's just a clusterfuck.
You know what?
And
if Trump would have stuck with that story, and they all would have stuck with that story, we would have yelled bullshit, but there kind of would have been no way to disprove it.
Right, like, if everyone towed the party line and said, this is what happened.
And Trump said, yeah, I followed the AG's...
But
then, of course, he's on tape a day later bragging about firing him
Russians.
And saying what he was a nutcase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's just like, oh, my God, I can't even.
I can't imagine why there is not just a flood of resignations from the White House.
Well, there's a flood of leaks. That's the next best thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing that I read this morning. There are several White House staffers that are grousing to the press that they have been thrown under the bus by Trump and that he should be liable for their legal defense. Good luck with that. I have a contractor or two in South Florida who you can, you know, team up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Best of luck.
Best of luck.
So everybody's turning on him, basically, except for his most inner circle. Although Trump did say something interesting yesterday. He parsed his denial in a very interesting way, where, you know, Russia collusion. Well, neither me or my campaign colluded. I can only speak for myself, though. Did you catch that?
No.
Yeah. That's the first time he said anything like that.
Just throw everybody under the bus.
Including his fucking son-in-law, maybe?
Yeah. Wow. Sure, fuck it. Why not?
What does Ivanka think of that?
Money? That's all she cares about. She doesn't give a shit about anything except money and her brand.
I mean, it's...
I don't know.
I have never seen this sort of craziness. Like, people are comparing it to Nixon Watergate, but you know what? Like, that the Nixon cabal kept that... You know, they kept a consistent message.
Yes.
And the party line and the excuses...
They did a pretty good job of covering it up.
For a while.
For a long time.
For a long time.
Like, they did a really good job.
Yeah.
It was just five dudes in the DNC. Nobody thought it would go back to the president of the United States. Not even Woodward and Bernstein thought it would get back to the president. They were like, best we got is maybe we can say that the committee to reelect was responsible. That was as far as they thought it was going to go.
Or Mitchell, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And the fact that it went all the way there.
Halderman was the key.
Yeah. They did an exceptionally good job.
And in this case, it's like Kushner's the key.
Yeah.
Because he links everything. He links all the business Russian interests directly to Trump. He was involved in the hiring of Flynn. Yeah. He apparently, if you believe these reports, was the impetus for firing Comey.
Yep.
So old Kush is the linchpin here, it seems.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's really bad news for the administration that he is probably the person of interest. The Washington Post guy had a very... Lots of interesting teasers. Keep your eye on the Washington Post today.
Yes. Just always keep your eye on the Washington
Post. Yes, but I think there's going to be very, very interesting stories coming out throughout the weekend about where the investigation is heading and who this person of interest is and what they have. Because that's what was teased, at least.
Yeah.
I didn't see any bombshells this morning, but...
I think they'll wait till Monday because that's how news works. Nobody pays attention on the weekends.
You think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There'll be some lead-up stories to give you some background, and then Monday morning,
they'll
drop it.
And let the Trump team enjoy him basking in the glow of being a diplomat.
And eating his Sharia stick with ketchup. Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. Okay. So while he's in Saudi Arabia, the meats there need to be prepared what's called halal style.
Yes.
Now, halal style means that...
It's kind of like the Jewish kosher, but for Islam?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
But the laws that dictate how that's done and why that's done are quite literally Sharia law.
Yes.
Now, if you have an uncle, you probably know that Sharia law, he doesn't know what that means, but it is the scariest thing on earth.
Yeah.
And it's creeping into our society.
And some parts of America are already governed by Sharia law.
Totally.
Did you
governed.
Know that?
There are whole swaths of the country.
Literally, my that are Republican under Sharia friend law. At work was like, "Are you seriously telling me that you think no parts of the United States are operating under Sharia law?" And I was like, "I am absolutely telling you that no parts of our country. Why would wait?
Does she know what Sharia law
no.
it means? Okay. Well, you should have asked her that.
I did. And she's like, so no one's operating under Sharia law. And I said, no, I mean, no. And she's like, that's crazy. And I'm like, I'm not crazy. We have a constitution and a government and rule of law that has nothing to do with. We haven't been overtaken since did I miss something?
Yeah,
I think what she's referring to is that there are maybe people in this country that live here, the scary people, who personally in their own lives do not like eat pork and like they personally
like,
operate their own lives underneath the rules of Sharia law.
Like Hasidic Jews or the Amish or Christian Scientists
right.
or Mennonites
right.
or whoever else or Sikhs or
correct. So they have a religion that they practice.
That seems weird to you, and therefore Sharia law.
So they are operating under Sharia law. And I was like, well, they're still governed by our laws.
Yes.
So even if that's true, that has nothing to do with laws. That's just how they live their life. Like, that's, anyway. So just in case, that's, yeah. So anyway, Sharia law is what halal is prepared.
Yes, yes. So quite literally, Trump will be eating a Sharia steak.
Yes.
But it was reported, I think, by the Washington Post. I think one of his staffers, for some reason, I guess maybe the question was asked, he will be enjoying it well done with ketchup.
Well done with ketchup. That is the way Trump eats his steaks. It's been reported for years that that is true. My little brother, the chef, would impeach him for that. That's a food crime. That is a...
Well, my little sister, the picky eater, if you could make her eat steak when she was six, that's how she would eat it.
Yeah. He's a baby.
Well done with ketchup.
Well done with ketchup. He eats his ribeyes that way. He's T-bones and steaks. Like
New York
strips. Yeah, he eats.
That is a crime against meat.
It is a food crime. It's just an impeachable offense for Emmett.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
and
it.
Me too.
Done. Like, that is a line in the sand too far. Cook a perfectly good piece of meat, well done, and then put fucking ketchup on it.
So it's all, like, just black and chewy.
Mm-hmm.
And then put a child's condiment on it.
Yes. That's how the president of the United States...
He'll be doing that, but it'll be Sharia.
Yeah.
Sharia overcooked steak with
Sharia
ketchup.
Sharia overcooked steak with ketchup.
America.
God. Just have a burger, right?
Right. Or a really cheap cut of steak, because it's going to be the same. Like, you know, shoulder cut or...
Just...
You know, chuck steak.
Just cut up a hot dog into pieces for him.
Rump roasts, maybe.
Give him a little mac and cheese.
Yeah.
And
a corn dog.
Corn dog.
Corn dog and some mac and cheese.
But cut it up. You don't want him to have the stick there.
No, no, no. He could choke on it.
Yeah.
Stick it in his eye or something.
Yeah, yeah. Can't have that.
The president is a big, dumb baby, guys. Kegro always says he's a big, dumb baby.
Yep.
And when a big, dumb baby is in the White House... Things go like you'd expect them to go.
Yeah.
Now, one more thing I wanted to touch on. With all of this unraveling, there's, you know, there's some dissenting voices out there. I don't even know. Who's Pippa Middleton? Some royal?
Royal French person? Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
French? No, that's not a French name.
No, no. Kate Middleton something.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Anyway, so we're going to get to, in the second half, there's a big election today in Montana to replace a GOP rep.
And is that election happening today?
That's happening today.
Okay.
There's
okay.
a chance that, not a great chance, but an okay chance that we might steal that seat.
Great.
It's going to be close. We'll see. I just wanted to talk real quick about, there's sort of these been dissenting voices like, well, don't rule Trump out. And you don't underestimate Trump. He could still somehow survive this and bounce back. And I'm like, well, yeah, if he wasn't Trump.
Yeah.
Like, let me give you a good analogy, right? If you're a Boston Celtics fan, I'm so sorry. But the first two games of that series have gone horribly wrong. The Cavs, I think, literally won by 50 last night. Like,
yeah.
It was the biggest lopsided playoff defeat, I think, ever, or one of the most of all time.
Yeah.
And that's been basically that story of the first two games. They've just been completely overmatched. And they're, you know, if you wanted to be a dissenting voice, okay, yeah, they got killed the first two games. But look, they were the number one seed in the East, and they're professionals, and they can't play any worse, and they could bounce back. It seems unlikely, but you never know. They might still make this a series. I would say that's highly unlikely, but, you know, it's plausible at least.
Yeah.
But in the case of Trump, that would be like Boston is down 0-2, and the team is made up of myself, Rachel.
Yeah.
My dog, Lily.
Mm-hmm.
Dana.
Addison, my niece. Who's
Addison.
Seven, although she might be pretty good.
And better than the Celts have been playing. And Blixa.
Yeah, my cat.
We're going to suit up and we're going to try to come back. It's not going to, it's just.
Yeah.
We're not capable.
Someone made the analogy the other day about, well, Bill Clinton came back from this. And I'm like, fuck you. If you think Trump, come on. Don't even. No, that's not even in the same game.
It's funny to bring up that Bill Clinton ultimately
was impeached
because of committing perjury while lying about a blowjob.
Yes.
Not about collusion with a foreign power during an election
right.
or financial ties to said foreign adversary.
Right. Or being bribable by Russia
or a national security advisor who was a foreign agent. We have more Flynn stuff to talk about, too.
God.
He survived
Lying about a blowjob
because the American public, when the economy was doing pretty well and he was a pretty popular president, said, you know what, I don't really care that he got a blowjob.
Or that he lied about it.
Or that he lied about it.
I shouldn't have been able to ask in the fucking first place. It's none of my business.
Yeah.
It's none of my business.
Ken Starr.
Who blows the president is none of my business.
Yeah. There's more Baylor fallout, too, if we wanted to get to that, speaking of Ken Starr.
We will, yeah. But no, just comparing Clinton's impeachment with Trump's impending impeachment and saying, well, Clinton came back, Trump could come back, is a good analogy for the you and me and Blixa and my niece are going to...
Suiting up as the Celtics and trying to win game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's about as likely.
In Cleveland.
Yeah. It's about as likely.
Blixa would just find a cozy corner of the
court.
He'd
yell at everyone.
Just lay and yell for attention. That's not very effective in the basketball court.
It's not?
No.
Oh, you have to let
Probably
him know.
Not. All right. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony, and so here we are. Nice spelling of Gallup on the cryon there, MSNBC. Gallup like a horse.
All right, I have a funny thing to read.
Okay.
Obama's presidency was like a middling wine. Nothing about it jumped out at you, and it left you feeling a little disappointed while you drank it. But when it was gone, you realized it was pleasant in the way that you'd gladly drink it again. Trump's presidency is your sixth neon-colored cocktail with a muddled Oreo and flavored bottom-shelf vodka that leaves you immediately doubled over and projectile vomiting on a beige Ford Ranger in the parking lot of a Bennigan's at 4:15 on a Tuesday afternoon after you just got fired from Party City for selling nitrous cartridges to 15-year-olds.
It's very specific.
It made me laugh. Because it's true. Also, I think more of President Obama's presidency than that, but I thought it was funny.
Mm.
Okay, what's next? I have something that's sort of not political, but has to do with gender bias in the media that I thought was really interesting.
Okay.
So, I knew that Gina Davis had been doing this project for a long time, trying to codify gender bias.
Gina Davis, the actress.
Yes, Gina Davis, the actress.
Star of many things.
Many, many things.
Like what was the pirate one with Matthew Modine?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Pirates Bay.
Something. I don't know.
Pirates of the not Caribbean.
Yeah, not that. I don't remember what it was called. But the title of the article is "New Research Offers Hard Data on Gender Disparities in Film: How Might the Characters We See on Screen Affect the Roles We Play in Society?"
Mm.
When they were 8 and 10, Kimberly and Rebecca Young had to choose who to send to space. The spacecraft the two constructed in their garage only had a payload big enough for one action figure. The sisters decided on Rey, the heroine of the movie Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Good call.
Yeah. With Rey in the captain's seat, the young sisters' spaceship lifted off. It was powered by a helium-filled balloon and was outfitted with solar panels, GPS, video cameras, and sensors to capture data and relay that back to Earth in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Their hope, to reach the stratosphere at roughly 40,000 feet. Instead, they soared even higher to 101,000 feet. They'd reached beyond their dreams to the very edge of space. Rey may be a fictional character, but to Rebecca and Kimberly, she's a very real role model. Quote, "We know that sometimes people have said that things like technology and science were only for boys. But knowing that there are people who are role models for us makes us feel good about our interests and what we like to do."
They actually got a helium balloon up to 110,000 feet?
Yeah. Oh. And they put Rey in the captain's seat.
I have to...
It's rad.
Do they get pictures or anything? Or?
Yeah. They started the Young Staff Space Program.
Cool.
There's a whole thing about it. Anyway, very cool. The point, though, of that is that... it matters, right, that they saw a woman. So
yes.
This article points out that the sport of archery suddenly became popular with girls in 2012, coinciding with The Hunger Games and Brave, right?
Okay.
Katniss and Merida.
All right.
that's previously a sport that probably not a lot of young women partook in, right?
Not too many.
In a study that examined this correlation, 7 out of 10 girls said that they'd taken up the sport because they were inspired by either Katniss or Merida. Merida? I don't know. But in a recent study, only 15% of K-12 students remember seeing women performing computer science tasks most of the time in film or TV. Mm. This is reflected in real life, where women make up only 17% of computer science majors, a steady decline from a peak at 37% in 1984. The argument here is that there's lots of reasons for this, but stronger female representation in programming, coding, and engineering roles on the big screen can help everyone envision women filling those roles in real life. This is an issue that Google's computer science and media team has been focused on for years. Okay, so Gina Davis noticed that the films her daughter watched lacked female characters. Even the cartoon animals were overwhelmingly male. She wondered if if unconscious bias toward women meant people accepted female characters having fewer lines and less screen time than men. So she founded the Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media in 2007 and started to collect data on movies. But essentially, a bunch of researchers just watched films and one by one logged gender-based patterns. It was slow, and there were so many movies to examine, and humans can only process so much and get it right only some percent of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Google teamed up with the Gina Davis Institute and basically made a machine that learned how to watch movies and capture data in a much more precise way, in a much obviously quicker way. And it's pretty amazing. The computer program they dubbed the Gina Davis Inclusion Quotient, the GDIQ, which I think is cute.
Mm-hmm.
It not only identifies a character's gender, but it knew to a fraction of a second how long each actor spoke and how long they were on screen. Which is amazing, because if it's a human, they can't get it within a fraction of a second, obviously.
Right.
The GDIQ uses machine learning to recognize patterns the casual movie viewer might overlook. The engineers didn't provide the computer with a template or a set of handcrafted rules. Instead, they were programmed to learn from examples that were annotated with the correct answer. So it's a learning thing, which is kind of awesome. So the team used this software to analyze the 100 highest grossing U.S. domestic live action films, according to the numbers from 2014, 2015, and 2016. The results are this. Men are seen and heard nearly twice as often as women. Women are on screen more than men in only one film genre, which is horror. In horror, women are on screen 53% of the time. In romantic comedies, which is interesting, 45% of the time. Comedy, 40%. Sci-fi, 36%. Drama, 34%. Action, 29%. Biography, 30%, and crime, 23%.
And they're in horror movies because they're usually the victims.
Boobs.
Well, and boobs, yeah. Boobs and victims.
Yep. Women are underrepresented in all ratings categories included in the 100 highest grossing films in the past 3 years. So PG movies, 42%, PG-13, 36%, and R, 34% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Women only made up 32% of screen time in Academy Award winning films. But it also found female-led films do better at the box office, earning 16% more than male-led
films.
Was that
this past year?
This was 2014 to 2016.
Yeah, I bet Daisy Ridley skewed that a little bit with Star Wars, which is fine. I'm just saying, on if you picked another sort of two-year window without a big Star Wars movie with a female lead,
maybe
it would. You would not
but
have that number.
But this is
maybe
reflected in films like Hidden Figures, which became the top-grossing Best Picture Academy Award nominee of the year.
Well, there you go. There's another one.
Yep.
But the point with that is, like, hey, you can make lots of money with female leads.
And we had female Ghostbusters, which did tremendously well at the box office. When you put women in leading roles in films, people go watch them.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the thing that Hollywood can't seem to wrap their fucking head around.
Well,
but
who
the
are
numbers,
all the execs?
Yeah. Representation matters at all levels.
Yeah.
It matters in executive, it matters in the cast, it matters also in, I was watching Project Greenlight this last season, the Matt mm-hmm. Damon thing, Ben Affleck thing, and there was some controversy because the executive producer on the film, like the showrunner kind of, was this black lady, and surrounded by her were white men. And she was making an argument that some of the crew should be people of color. And they were like, representation doesn't matter in who makes the movie. It just matters who's on screen. Okay. Mansplaining and white-splaining or black-splaining to a lady.
Sure, sure.
And so she insisted that since this movie had no black characters at all, that there should be no black extras. There would be no black butlers. There would be no black... anybody black in the movie if you're not going to have black people.
Right.
And then they tried to bring some guy on to be a driver, and she was like, what did I fucking say? What did I say? We're not going to be your servants in this movie. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Anyway, so it matters at all levels. But it is important that, you know, if you represent people, they'll go watch the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that, I thought that was really interesting.
it is interesting.
The impact of this study has been that they showed it to a bunch of filmmakers and executives and people like that. And they said that following a presentation of GDIQ findings, 68% of filmmakers reconfigured two or more of their projects after hearing the numbers.
Okay.
And 41% stated that it had impacted four or more of their movies.
Okay.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Just having the data and knowing is important.
Yeah.
Because it is a blind spot.
And that's from a scientific standpoint, you need data to show people.
Right. I can yell and scream with my anecdotal evidence, but...
Well, that's what most people do. They have a hypothesis and they yell about it, but hard data helps.
Or life experience, or even talking to women who work in the industry isn't enough. But hard data makes a difference.
Well, you can collect qualitative data and make it quantitative. Qualitative data means, like, you do a one-on-one interview with somebody in the industry.
Right.
Quantitative would mean you did 100 of those interviews and you found a trend in things they feel or
exactly. We studied that when I took Soch.
Right.
We studied different methods and how the different impacts that different methods can have and what they're useful for. And this one is particularly useful. And because they were able to digitize it and make it, you know, they could study so many more films with such greater accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That also made a difference. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope we see more of that.
So pivoting back to politics for a minute, there's a fairly important election in Montana today. It's a special election because you had a GOP rep who's retiring.
Okay.
And you have an opportunity for a challenging Democrat who has a chance to...
Take a seat that we could never possibly have taken before.
Yeah.
Kind of like Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's, they've done well in fundraising.
Okay.
It's,
Bernie was stumping for the Democrat, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the gentleman's name is Rob Quist. He's a musician, kind of a quirky guy. Looks a little like Kinky Friedman, if you remember him.
Hat
in the mic. He was in Texas. Don will know exactly who you're talking about.
But this is the Republican that's running against him?
No, I think that's Rob Quist.
It says Greg Gianfort.
Yeah, it just says who's against who, and it shows one guy. It's a bad caption.
Okay.
But
that's the Democrat, the big cowboy hat guy?
Yeah.
Oh, he's Montana, so that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Great.
And... he's got a chance. Now, I'm not sure he's going to win.
He likely won't.
There's big Republican money against him, but Bernie's been stumping for him. Of course, Bernie's had a bad track record of stumping for people in these special elections.
Well, I guess he finally decided maybe that's a good idea.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean the people he's been stumping for have been losing.
Oh, well, but we're going to lose most of these. The fact that we're even
challenging
and or even coming close is the story.
Right.
We're going to lose, I would say, probably all of them.
Well,
if we pull out one or two,
I think we've got a chance in Georgia. I think Ossoff's got a real chance. He's got a lot of momentum there.
Yeah.
And the polls are showing basically 50-50, some slight leads for him, but he needs amazing turnout, and they're keeping the pressure on. So I think we got a puncher's chance in Georgia. Montana, I don't know. I haven't spent a ton of attention, but it'll get noticed if it's really close.
Well, this is what this is pointing out too, is a lot of liberals are complaining about the national party's reluctance to engage in these kind of contests because they're saying, look, we may lose, but we have the opportunity to steal a seat, and we're not going to steal it if you don't engage at all.
Right.
And engaging energizes Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
It says, hey, we have a real chance. And Democrats very much want to take advantage of Trump's unpopularity, and there's a possibility we can win it. Let's put some money there.
Well, the devil's advocate view is that if we completely get behind this and we lose, that looks really bad. You know, then we seem feckless and...
I disagree with that. I really, really disagree with that.
I don't necessarily agree with it either, but I'm saying that I could see how they might see it that way.
Saying we've never even tried before because they win by 70-30 margins and we just got it to 51-49. Uh-huh. Okay, we lost. We also gained 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's saying something about the energy of the party and the unpopularity of Trump and the possibilities for 2018. It's about keeping momentum going. Even if we lose, it's about saying we're mad.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of elections scare the shit out of people in other districts who might go, oh my God, 2018 is coming. And my constituents are really mad. Yeah. Now, I'm not up for special election now.
This seat that was safe is no longer safe.
This seat that was way safer than my seat is not safe anymore.
Like, it's okay. They didn't lose the seat, but it swung 20 points.
Right. I only won by four.
Yeah, exactly.
Theirs swung by 20.
Right.
And I have the same policies and voting record as this guy.
Right. Shit. Exactly. Exactly.
Shit.
And then they'll, you know, what? Let's say the Republican wins tonight, which he probably will. They will, you know, paint it as, see, we held off the challenge and this shows mm-hmm. how strong everything is. But they'll be scared.
They'll be scared. And in places like Colorado, you know, where Mike Kaufman is up for re-election. He's pretty roundly defeated every Democrat who has tried to challenge him, including Morgan Carroll this last election cycle.
He won by like 9 yeah. or 10, something like that.
In a district where Hillary Clinton won by like 10.
Yeah.
So it was one of the biggest, what do you call it, like differences?
Divergences.
Yeah. And we've got a pretty good candidate coming up against Kaufman, and he's one of those people that, like, he's not in a red state.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not in a red district. Hillary Clinton won his district by 10 points.
Sure.
So he may think he's personally safe, but given the political environment right now, his...
Kaufman knows he's not safe.
Remember, he's scared.
Kaufman came out against AHCA.
Yes, he did.
So
yes, he did. And the person who's running against him currently, his name is Jason Crow. Mike Kaufman is a veteran, and he's never run against a veteran before. Jason Crow is a veteran that has, like, had 3 combat tours.
Mm-hmm.
He's young, good-looking, young family, like just a really energetic guy. And Kaufman generally, his campaign, it's interesting. He's taking it really seriously. His campaign has gone after this guy on multiple occasions and said, like, oh, he's just a shill of Nancy Pelosi. And because
mm-hmm.
he spoke at the DNC briefly, not like anybody probably remembers him, but he did do a speech at the DNC, so... Kaufman's trying to do the old, oh, he's just been handpicked by Washington and he's not a real Coloradan and blah, blah, blah. And Kaufman's gotten some pretty bad coverage with local press about his treatment of this person because they kind of made fun of his combat tours, his mm-hmm. his being a veteran, and everybody kind of went, whoa, you're a veteran and we don't, like, challenge the no.
Yeah.
You know? So people like that, I think... Look at races like this.
That didn't work out well for Joe Walsh when he went after Tammy Duckworth's service.
Yeah, exactly. So I think people like Kaufman look at races like this and go, shit. And that's why he voted against the ACHA.
And why he may stand up to Trump in other avenues as well.
Exactly. This kind of stuff keeps the pressure on these Republican senators. So it's not just about the win. It's about letting everybody know in no uncertain terms that we're coming after you mm-hmm. in 2018. So shape up.
Yeah, so when, because I don't think we're going to pull it out of Montana. I think we'll come close. It'll be 4 or 5 points.
Yeah.
At least my guess. But if we don't listen to the hype and the crap and the talking heads say, oh, despite Trump's unpopularity, the Republicans still held the seat. If we come within 5 points, that's like a 20, 25, 30 point swing.
Exactly.
I don't know exactly what, but it would be a huge, huge swing.
Like, this is a safe seat, meaning we've never really even tried.
Right.
Now it's up for grabs. That means all these other not safe seats that are, you know, 50-50, we'll see who wins, we may have them by 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nationwide.
No, if you take 15, 20 point swings which is what we might be looking at in Georgia and in this Montana district. And you apply them to similar districts, like, and you do the math, it's like taking back the House is not necessarily a pipe dream anymore.
Yep.
So,
and remember, special elections voter turnout is garbage.
Usually, yeah.
So, and Republicans vote more than Democrats. That's just the way it goes. So, no, yeah, it's good. Don't get discouraged if we lose, because we're going to lose most of these. But we may win a lot of other ones in 2018.
Yeah.
As long as you don't get all discouraged and, oh, I guess it doesn't matter and nothing matters. And
well, that's what the media is going to try to tell you.
Right.
And that's what the Republicans are going to try to tell you. But dig a little deeper and understand what's really happening here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, good news. Things seem to be going, I mean, things for the world is melting down, but we have a possibility, really, I think, if we work really hard and pick good candidates and run good campaigns, of possibly taking the House in 2018. And what an extraordinary thing that would be. Yeah.
Well, it's a necessary thing.
Yes.
Because even if it's not Trump, then it's Pence. And then in some ways, that's even more scary and dangerous. So.
Yeah.
We absolutely, 2018 is all hands on deck.
Yes, it is. And just to reiterate what we were talking about last week, we're in this window now of people are starting to announce, and you need to pick your people and you need to help them win. That's what you need to do. And now's the time, again, that you pick who do you want. And think about a couple of things when you do that. And I don't want to be cynical, but let's be realistic about politics, okay? When you're picking the candidate that you would like to run for your state house or your congressional seat that's coming up in 2018 or your local city council or whatever it is, you need to think about a couple of things. Money. Money matters. Money's important. Does this person have institutional support? Do they have structural support within the party? If they do, they're going to stand a better chance of winning. That's just the facts. Now, if you hate the person who has institutional support, okay, then you better get your game on. You better get, you know, grassroots donations, because you need money to win. That's just the way that it is. You need money and you need support. And I don't care how great your guy is. If he or she cannot raise enough money to win, then they won't win.
No. Yeah.
That's just the way that it works. And I wish it didn't work that way, but it is. It's good if they have some kind of name recognition in the community. You know, there's lots of things to think about, but I guess I'm just trying to say, don't be too idealistic.
Well, we say that, and we're about to embark on helping a candidate with very little name recognition and no money
for local city council. Yes, we are. Fortunately, we have some
There's name recognition in the very immediate community.
Right. Well, and think about this. In the race that we're helping, this is my neighbor. Because there's no mayoral race, the last election, 2,300 people voted, which makes her win number 1,600 people.
Right.
So she has a lot of community support. She is the president of her local neighborhood association. She's active in community service.
She's got a couple hundred
involvement.
A couple hundred banked already.
Absolutely. And those people are also willing to volunteer and knock doors. One of her friends is building a website, which is what she does professionally.
And she's
for
got
a
the
living.
Local cops on her side.
The mayor of her city asked her to run, and is willing to endorse her, which is great.
We hope.
Well, it's just complicated whether we want that or not. You know, there's another person running against her that has more institutional support than she does, and I understand that. I just happen to think that she will be better at the job. Now, if it just fizzles, I will 100% back this other Democrat help him win.
And so would she.
Absolutely. Obviously. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, in city council, they do not affiliate. So you do not run as a Democrat or a Republican. How you find out is just, how are they affiliated?
Sure.
You look it up.
Yeah. No, you just run registered Democrat? My name for city council.
Are they a registered Democrat or are they a registered Republican?
Right.
And so that's something that we were talking about that sometimes frustrates voters. because you don't know a lot about your city council, and you're like, well, is she a Democrat or a Republican? Yeah. And you're like, well, technically. So what we always say is she's registered as a Democrat.
Right.
But it's also helpful with unaffiliated voters because they don't love parties that much.
Mm-hmm.
Really city council,
especially someplace like Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of unaffiliated
voters. If
there's
a D or R next to your name, they kind of cringe a little bit.
They can. Yeah. But sometimes it frustrates them, too. Because they're like, well, I don't know anything about her, so right. How do I know who to vote for?
It can go either way.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So we have scripts to deal with both of those situations. But, you know, I'd like to see her in the seat. I think she has a lot of community support. And so I'm going to try to help her win.
Colorado is also a place I think is a little less partisan than other places.
It absolutely is.
It is partisan, but you could knock on a door with a guy with guns everywhere and... You know, 2A everywhere. And,
I did it.
Yeah. And they'll totally be open to voting for a Dem if there's stuff in the platform that they don't mind.
I talked to multiple gun-toting, crazy Republicans and told them why they had to vote for Daphne. And they were like, by the time I got done with them, they were like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
And she won.
Yeah.
But it's literally those conversations at the door that get voters.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not... anything else.
Yeah.
It's those conversations. Right. And this person that we're supporting is very committed to door knocking.
Oh,
she worked on the school board election. She knocked on my door. Yeah, the school board election. And she's just a really great lady. So anyway, we're walking the walk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just telling you to go do these things.
This is why we can't do more than one podcast a week.
Right.
Because our lives are full of stuff.
Right. And then we also have to pick the person that's going to be my state house representative, because my current state house representative is going to run for, or is running currently for the congressional seat that's opening up,
mm-hmm.
because the congressperson is running for governor. So it's a big shakeup in Colorado right now.
Yeah, we need to keep that seat.
Yes.
We can't afford to lose any house seats.
Right.
Obviously.
Two house members. I'm sorry, one house member and two state senators are running. And I'm not going to say yet because I'm just not sure what I'm doing. But
mm-hmm.
Anyway, so pay attention to local politics. It matters way more than you think. And get involved. That's the best place to start. If you don't know what to do, just go figure out who's running, talk to them, have a cup of coffee, especially if it's like a city council person, just go have a cup of coffee with all of them and talk to all of them and figure out where they are and figure out what they want to do for your community and then pick one
mm-hmm.
and help them, or state house rep or state senator or whatever, right? These people are incredibly accessible and unlikely, like they're your neighbor. They have to live where you live. So you're going to run into them. So these people are not like, you know, political elitists who don't want to talk to you. They'll totally have a cup of coffee with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what other special elections are coming up? There's one in Montana today. Ossoff one is coming up soon, right? Just a couple weeks, early June?
I think early June.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That'll be an exciting one.
I really think we got a shot at this one.
I hope so. I mean, it would be, again, if we lose, but it would be amazing to take back that seat.
Yeah, I think we have a legit shot.
And he'll have to rerun then in 2018, yeah?
Yeah.
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 So.
But unless, like, he has a big scandal or something, then.
Well, it's still a Democrat in that seat
running again. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. But, I mean, he'll have a nice honeymoon, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
And so, he really works hard to get something for his district or his community, then they'll reward him.
Yeah. Or, you know, stands up for their health care in a, you know, public way or mm-hmm. or the things that the people in his community would.
Well, we'll see, right?
I'm less familiar with than he is, obviously.
We'll see if he can govern.
Yeah.
As well as be a pretty face and run a campaign.
Yeah.
Because those two things are not always
correct.
Sometimes, congruent.
Yes, as we saw at the national level.
Well, I don't know what we saw at the national level.
I think Hillary Clinton is not great as a candidate. I think everyone knows that. I think she's tremendously brilliant and smart, but she doesn't have the charisma that some people need, which I think is garbage.
Yeah, I mean,
she's
part
tremendously
of it,
good at governing.
I'm not saying that's why she lost.
I'm saying that those two things are not congruent. She's really fucking great at governing mm-hmm. and not really great at campaigning. She would tell you the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What else?
Well,
Any updates on Lily and her stupid Republican dog asshole? Did he ever?
No.
No.
He just disappeared. I'm going to try, but I'm never going to see a dime from that guy.
Yeah.
She's great, though. Her cone is off.
She's doing
Her
good.
Wound is healed. She's happy and frolicking and not afraid of dogs, it seems. So.
Good.
She's doing just fine.
Great.
I haven't seen that guy show his face in the park anymore, which of course he would not.
Good. I would hope not.
Yeah.
I hope he went to dog training.
The guy or the dog? The guy, too.
The guy with the dog?
He got a shot collar. He needs one.
He does.
That's his Trump.
Obviously. Yep. Yep. All right. So predictions. Does he resign? Does he get impeached? Is it better for his ego to get fired or quit?
Oh, he's not gonna go through the impeachment process. When we get to that point, he's done. He's gonna quit.
He'll just be like, fuck you guys.
Fuck you guys.
I didn't want to do this job anyway.
I'm going home.
Yeah.
The problem for this is, and I don't know if I discussed this last podcast or not. Let's say this is how I thought it was gonna run, was he would get through a year or two, not pass any meaningful legislation, things would be hard, he'd be unpopular. And this would be sans all the Russia stuff and things blowing up all around him. And then he would quit at that point. He would cite a bullshit health reason or family reasons or something. And he would just quit. And Pence would become vice president.
Because he's bored and it takes up too much of his time.
Right.
It's hard.
Yeah. But now he's got some major problems. He's got legit legal problems.
Yeah.
Now, Pence can go ahead and pardon him for certain things.
Yeah.
But now they're looking at everything. They're looking at his financial ties. They're looking at Russian money laundering that he helped with his real estate deals with these Russian oligarchs and mobsters. Mm-hmm. Jared and Ivanka may now be in some trouble.
His family might be in trouble.
Because they've now been busted trying to peddle influence. We didn't even get to the China story where they went trying to sell visas in China.
Wow.
That was last week?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. So his brand has now been tarnished.
Yes.
So not to the point where the Trump name isn't popular enough that if he quit and tried to start a new reality show or a TV network, he couldn't do it. But he stepped into something that he doesn't fully understand how serious it is.
Yes.
Forget his presidency for a second, because that's toast anyway.
Yeah.
But like now going forward, he's got legal. Now he's always been in court being sued by somebody, but this is a little different. This is the full
he
force.
He can intimidate
of the,
people and just kind of hire enough lawyers to drag the process out that he bankrupts them. So they stop doing it. And like he can use all of these mechanisms of government and of institutions for his own gain as a private citizen.
But now this is the federal government
looking
into massive corruption
and possible treason
and espionage
The
whole nine yards.
It's a whole other thing.
So he will quit. When it gets too hot, he will say the hell with this, and he'll hand the mess over to Pence. And I said, like, we're getting to a level of crazy that would it shock you in a couple months where the whole Trump family disappears one night and pops up in Russia seeking political asylum?
No. Right?
Trump.
I mean,
Ivanka,
obviously, Russia's not going to extradite them back here. It'd be a very safe haven. They've got business dealings over there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. What? They're not going to go to jail.
No.
And if they're like, fuck it, they already know that we're in with the Russians. Let's just go to Russia. We already got accused of it. Like, fuck it. Let's just go. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think it would send shockwaves. But would it be surprising? Really?
Yeah, there's no more rules, really, to anything.
No.
I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not saying I'm predicting that is what would happen. It wouldn't shock me, some crazy shit like that.
Yep.
But eventually, I can think he's just going to abdicate. Now, the Republicans better hope that's what he does.
Yeah.
Because if he bows his back and tries to fight this, like, the way he'll fight to not pay a contractor.
Uh-huh. God.
Then the Republicans are so screwed.
They just have to impeach him at that point.
Well, think about dragging this out up till the fall of next year when elections are coming up.
I mean, it took Nixon 2 years, right, to get impeached?
Yes. Well,
From the break-in. Yeah, but not from...
But it took months and months after the break-in for that to start percolating.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot to prove. And,
yeah.
You know, in the movie, they only show the very, very beginning of it.
There's right.
lots of reporting and shit that went down. They show it like a montage on a typewriter.
Yeah, the state and this is the headline.
And it spans like a year and a half.
Yeah, and yeah. then finally Nixon resigns.
And finally Nixon resigns.
Yep.
So
the Republicans want him to quit, I would think.
They will, not right this second, because they still want to jam through.
But that's the thing.
Healthcare.
That's true, but Pence will sign it.
Well, and what they don't realize is they're so insulated from reality that that's even worse. Like, it's bad enough if they don't get anything passed. And we get to fall of 2018 and Trump quits or is about to be impeached or whatever.
Or is in the middle of impeachment proceedings.
Even worse is this all hanging over the head. And by the way, we also passed a healthcare bill that literally 80% of the American public doesn't want.
Yeah.
Like, that's way worse for them. And they don't yeah. they don't see that.
They don't know that.
No.
No.
They haven't.
They said, some we said them. We were going to do it and we have to do it or they're going to kill us. And you're like, are you listening to them? They said, wait, stop, never mind, don't.
Well, this is primary politics versus general politics, right?
Yeah.
They're afraid. They're still more afraid of getting primaried from the right. This is like Saddam Hussein when the Americans were rolling in 2003 and surrounding from all sides. He's like, keep an eye on those Shia in the north. They're going to come get us now. Yeah. Like that's what was on his mind. That's what he cared about.
Yeah.
That's where the Republicans are, you know,
yeah.
with the walls closing in. They're like, we better hold the line or we're going to get primaried from the right.
Yeah.
Which would be even better for us.
Yeah.
Cause they need to have real crazies, unelectable crazies. Yeah. Todd Akins everywhere.
Right.
That
Which
are running,
is, you know?
Yeah.
Some of those people get elected.
Some of those people do get elected, but
we get
but
stuck with the Freedom Caucus.
Right. Then. On the whole, it would be very, very bad for Republicans.
I agree.
So they're damned if they do, and they're damned if they do, and they're really, really, really damned if they do at this point. I don't see a good way out. Now, the flip side of that is that a guarantee that our side is going to have their shit together and make
no.
these huge gains? No.
No.
You got Bernie out there who's all over the place.
Biden now being like, I'd have been a better candidate. Can we stop talking about the fucking election already?
Yeah.
I'm done talking
even,
about it.
Even
it
if
doesn't
you,
matter anymore.
Well, it makes you want to slap Joe with all, you know, we love Biden.
But, I do love him.
But it makes you want to just smack him around a little bit and say, okay.
Hey, can you stay on message for a minute?
Yeah,
can
okay.
we talk about Trump for a minute instead of the fucking election that's done?
A, if you're trying to unify the left now, that's not a way to do it. B, even dumber, if you're thinking you're going to run in 2020, you're going to alienate all of Hillary Clinton's supporters?
The winner of the popular vote?
Yeah. Or C, what was C?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, you were the better candidate, yet you decided not to run, and we lost. So
thanks for that.
Yeah, it's like
shut up.
There was no good reason.
And can we just stay on?
But
message?
Biden does that a lot.
Can we just stay on message? As can we just please, for the love of Rachel, in this country, can you just
no? We can't
stay on just for a week.
I mean,
just one day at a time.
We laugh
when
about,
you're gonna say something out loud. I want you to think about Rachel, and I want you to say, is this going to help us win in 2018? And if the answer is no, shut your fucking mouth.
Well, that's the problem with Biden, right? It's a double-edged sword with him.
I know.
He is so great, but he'll turn around and stick his foot in his mouth so deep.
Yeah.
And that's how it is, you know? Yeah. You know, we laugh and we make fun of the Trump White House and the Republicans not being able to stay on message for like 60 seconds. We're not doing a much better job of it.
No.
You got Bernie out there saying, I don't know if this guy's liberal enough, but vote for the anti-choice guy. And you've got this bullshit unity tour, which doesn't seem unifying at all. And
then Biden being like, let's talk about that Hillary thing. Shut up.
Biden. And then you still have progressives grousing about Hillary Clinton. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, they are serving this up for us on a silver platter, and we can't grab it.
If we don't take
it, I'm
going to burn it down. I swear to God. We have time. We have time.
Yeah.
We do. We just have to focus, stay on message, and the message is not only, oh my God, what a shit show, but the message is also, here's what the Democratic Party is, and here's what we can do for you, right? Mm-hmm. That's the message. Here is what we stand for, and this is how it relates to you, voter. That's mm-hmm. it. It's very easy. If we could just do that for the next year and a half, we got it. It's done. Everyone agrees with us. We mm-hmm. just have to tell them, right?
Well, yes. The problem is, and this Quist guy, they just showed him playing his guitar. He looks a little bit like Val Kilmer, which is a little disturbing.
No, he does not. He's old.
So is Val Kilmer.
Whatever.
Have you seen Val Kilmer lately?
I do not want to talk about this. What were you going to say?
With the hat and the mustache and everything, he does look a little like old Val Kilmer, who's out on a ranch in a cowboy hat these days anyway. What I was going to say is, unfortunately, there is a segment of the left, the Bernie or bust left, who now views everything through the prism of a purity test. And if
I know we've talked about this,
if X candidate is not check all the boxes for them, they're gonna sit on their hands or yell about it because they're not very pragmatic. We're gonna have to fight through that. We're gonna have to fight through it.
We're gonna have to ignore them.
Well,
no,
I don't know that we can ignore them.
We have to ignore them. I am not going to give them a public platform to shit all over Democrats. I don't give a shit. Go talk in your bubble amongst yourselves. I'm going to stay on message. I'm going to say, this is what the Democratic Party believes in. This is what it's going to do for you. This is my candidate. Please vote for them. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit about your purity tests. I'm not going to have this argument with these people anymore. I'm not going to engage them anymore. You will either toe the fucking party line so we get rid of fascists, or go talk in a bubble. But I am not engaging with these people. I'm not doing it. I'm talking about the Democratic Party, the platform that we developed that I'm very proud of, and I'm going to connect that to individual voters at doors and tell them why they need to vote for Democrats. And if the fucking purity people want to shit all over us, they can do it somewhere else. But I am not engaging these people. It didn't help. It just divides everything. It makes it seem like we're fighting. If I just say, like, this tiny 2% of people over here are crazy, and they can just go talk, but we as a party don't try to say, it's like, no, they're not the majority of us. They're a tiny percentage and they're loud and annoying and I don't care. They're not Democrats, so fuck off. Go run your own party. Go talk in a bubble. But I am not going to use the Democratic Party's platform to engage in this little fringy weird population that makes us seem like we're divided. We're not. So, the overwhelming majority of Democrats agree on our platform.
So let me correct myself. The Montana election, I think early voting may have started today, but I think the actual vote is on the 25th, okay. I want to say. Because, yeah, Saturday would be weird, although they do that sometimes, right?
Are you going to address what I just said?
Well, yeah. I understand what you're saying. I just don't think we can cast all those people out. We have to try to talk some reason to them.
No. We tried that. We tried saying it's either Trump or Hillary, and they picked they are unable to be reasoned with.
Well, but I think maybe some of them, for them it was a protest vote they felt they could afford to cast.
Okay, fine.
And now they've learned that they can't, or they shouldn't have.
Well, what I'm saying is if these people have not learned their lesson, and they're still doing purity tests and shitting all over Democrats, then they are not able to be reasoned with. They're just as bad as the Freedom Caucus people.
Yeah.
And if Republicans had not capitulated to those people, they wouldn't be in office right now.
Then there's the, hey, stop talking about Russia. Russia's not so bad. You know, Michael Tracy types.
Yeah.
But I don't even acknowledge them.
No, exactly.
Matt Taibbi.
I just don't care. I don't care. I'm tired of all these fringy weirdos impugning on our message and having us feel like we have to acknowledge all of them all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we don't acknowledge a schizophrenic human being's reality as our own. We just say, okay, that person needs help and they can't be reasoned with. I'm not going to acknowledge this bullshit non-reality as part of my message. No. If you still think that you did the right thing and that Trump is better because revolution blah, fuck off. You and Susan Sarandon can go live somewhere else. I'm going to fix the country as a Democratic Party, and I'm not going to address this crazy fringy weirdos anymore. I'm tired of it.
Okay. On that note, that was a really good rant, by the way.
Thanks.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I couldn't have. That's why I let you do it. So we'll be back next week. Irreverent Duo on Twitter, irreveranttestimony@gmail.com. If you want to give us some money, It is Patreon, right?
Yeah.
Patreon.com/irreverent testimony.
Yeah.
Gonna get my dad on one of these days. And oh. You want to pitch the ladies only podcast?
Yeah, we're doing another ladies only podcast. We're gonna talk about some very awesome stuff with some pretty amazing ladies. Molly's coming back. Maybe
Sarah Burst.
Maybe Sarah Burst, if I can get her nailed down. And then a lady who's gonna talk about anti-oppression work in healthcare. She's incredible.
We're doing that next week?
Maybe next week, maybe the week after, but it's coming up.
Okay, stay active, stay tuned, and stay involved. Adios.